I love the energy of the place. It's gorgeous.
Well, San Diego is the place. It's the place where all the brains are, okay? Well, yes. Not all the brains. This is where some of the brains hang out, here on the edge. So, yes. Brains, I want to have a spot of tea with my guest today, Gina Gardner. She is here all the way from the United Kingdom, and she is going to talk about some very, very powerful things. You know, she is the author of 5 books, and 2 of them are international bestsellers. She has Walked on Fire with Tony Robbins. I love that. She has a program called the Enlightenment Leadership Program and Genuinely You. And she's also recovered from a catastrophic fall in a ski accident. We want to talk about all that and then some, and the wonderful things that she's doing and what she's pouring into the world. Help me welcome her, brains. There she is, right there, Gina Gardner. So hello and welcome to On the Edge, beautiful. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. And thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show.
Well, really, you know, it's a pleasure. It is really a pleasure. I wish we could sit here and literally have a cup of tea together, but you know what? We're only a plane ride away, right?
Very true. The world has got smaller, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, in so many ways. So thank you so much again, like I said, for being here. Tell my brains a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
I've been working in the business of personal empowerment and transformational leadership in one way or another for over 30 years. I was the principal of a large school for over 20 years. And for the most part, I ran my school from a wheelchair. And the gift in that was that I had to create a different way of empowering people that didn't rely on me standing behind them, that actually helped them take radical responsibility for their own performance and a shared responsibility for everybody else's performance. And it was highly successful. The school was on the 100 best schools in England twice during my time as head. And it's the same strategies and principles that I will use with businesses and with individuals, and they really, really work. And it's the bedrock of the Enlightened Leadership Program, which I just launched, in fact, a week ago.
Tell us a little bit about that program. What does that look like?
It's a 10-month program, and it is available to anybody around the world. You need to be English speaking, because all of the resources and all of the opportunities will be in English. But apart from that, that's the only restriction. So there's 2 very specific strands which are interconnected, because my view is you can't lead other people well unless you can lead yourself.
That's right.
And if you look at the quality of leadership around the world at the moment, it's pretty toxic. You know, many of my clients are working in organizations where either they're the leaders and they're struggling, or they are struggling as part of the team because the leadership is poor. And in the UK alone, over half the prescriptions are for antidepressants. And most people are citing that they're unhappy at work as being at least one of the contributory factors. So the program is 10 months, and it's deliberately done over 10 months so that people get an opportunity to really establish new ways of being, new ways of working. So the personal development side is delivered through group coaching sessions, videos, activities, themed journal. The professional leadership side is through PowerPoint presentations. You work one-on-one with a leadership facilitator, hour and a half as things start to set things up, and then a session a month to keep things on track and to challenge. It's been accredited by the Chartered Institute of Professional Development and counts for 120, I think you call them CE hours in the States, across the 10 months. And it's designed to help people work on their self-beliefs, what are limiting beliefs, and how they manage those, and really installing more empowering beliefs around relationships and relationships with self and others, around their view around success. Do they fear failure? Do they fear success?
Right, because people fear success. They do. They really
half, you know, 50% of people fear failure and the other half fear success.
Exactly. And they don't know how to prepare themselves for when success shows up.
And so because they become frightened of that, then they sabotage. So just as things are getting really good, then they'll do something to take them back.
Yeah,
and absolutely. That whole, what do you mean by success? Because your blueprint for success and my blueprint for success are going to be different.
Exactly.
And there's no right or wrong. They're just different. But if you don't identify what you believe success is, how can you aim for it?
Right. Exactly. Now, I want to dial back just a little bit because you mentioned something that was very important and I don't want my brains to miss it. You said that you were the principal, the head principal for the schools there, and you did that out of a wheelchair. Tell my brains a little bit about, what happened to you, what was your realization, and how you got in that wheelchair.
The initial problem, the starting point was the ski accident. I'd had a bad fall on the penultimate day of the holiday. And so on the last day, I said to the people, like my friends I was skiing with, look, I'm going to go and ski on my own. I'm going to get my confidence back because I was a bit shaken. I'll meet you for lunch. And when I met them for lunch, they said, we found this fabulous new run. Come with us. And so off we went. It was a beautiful day, really sunny, really hot day. And we got off the chairlift at the top of the mountain and I followed them. And as they went round a corner, I could see something was wrong. And instead of being on the beautiful red run that they had found, we found ourselves on the Schindlergratz, which was the most difficult black run in St. Anton.
Ooh.
And it was full of moguls. Now, some people may be very familiar with a mogul. It's where the weather has eroded the snow and you get bumps, and you can get bumps a bit like cobbles, a couple of inches tall, but these were monsters. It was a very steep slope, but it was full of 6-foot moguls. And so I skied the first third and I'd fallen and then taken a while to get to where my friends were sitting on their mogul, a bit like elves sitting on a mushroom. Took my skis off. And the sun had melted the top of the mogul, and so it gave way. And because it was so steep and because there were so many moguls, there was nowhere to land. And I fell, I'm told, between 150 and 200 feet.
Lord have mercy.
Now, I knocked myself out, fortunately, because I think if I had been conscious, I would have probably tensed. But I managed, I had a concussion and I trapped a nerve in my neck, but I managed to ski down. There wasn't much of the slope left between the two falls and so on. So, and traveled back to England. It took me about 3 weeks to get back to school. And then 3 weeks later, I was due to go as the deputy borough leader for a large ski party, 150 some children going skiing. And although I was still experiencing a few problems, I was given permission by the medics to go because we had a doctor with us. As the week went on, I got more and more like Quasimodo. And by the last evening, I couldn't manage anymore. And I said to my colleagues, I'm going to have to go and lie down. I hadn't been lying down very long when I suddenly realized that I was paralyzed down one side.
Oh my God.
I didn't want to frighten the children. And so I just lay waiting for somebody to come. And I have to say, it was the longest time. They arrived, all hell broke loose. I was taken off to hospital. And to cut a long story short, I was eventually flown home. And over the next months, I regained my mobility, but not ever. I didn't ever regain my full vibrancy.
Mm.
And over the next 2 or 3 years, my mobility deteriorated. By 1987, because the accident was in 1983, I had to use a wheelchair to get around school because it was a very spread site.
Wow.
And then in 1996, I sneezed and I ruptured a disc. I had failed back surgery and became completely wheelchair bound. It took me 18 months to walk to the bottom of my very little garden. And then 3 months later, I was physically sick. And then I ruptured another disc. And I was completely wheelchair bound until 2004, when I had an internal spinal stimulator fitted. And now in 2000 and just beginning of 2020, I don't use a wheelchair in the house or the garden. I can walk very short distances, but if I go into town or I go away, I have to use the wheelchair then. But my mobility is now the best it's been since 1996, but it's been very slow.
Is your aha moment. That was your awakening. that caused a shift in you, you know, because again, you are a vibrant young skier.
Yes.
You know? You're a daredevil, you're a risk taker. And then you find yourself in this vulnerable position. When that happened to you and you're in this down period, you know, of course, there's going to be a lot of self-reflection. There's going to be a lot of self-shame and hurt and disappointment and anger. How did you shift yourself? How did you, you know, learn to forge ahead and not be angry and not be bitter, but continue to try?
I think the first thing is that I became the head teacher 6 months. I was the deputy at the school. The head died very suddenly, the principal, a year on, and I became the head of the school. And I was determined that the school was going to do well, and that I would not be the reason for the school not doing well. And there's been a huge gift in the disability in that, because I couldn't physically get into the classrooms, I had to find a different way of developing and empowering my staff. And so my focus was very much on doing something that I loved and was really positive, rather than focusing on my disability. So, for example, after I came out of hospital from one of the back surgeries, I've been in hospital 6 weeks, but I was back at school 4 days later. Why? Because if I was at home, if somebody hadn't left me a cup out and filled the kettle, I couldn't make a cup of tea. But I could go into school, and if I was at home, I'd got reading and daytime TV was all I could manage. But I could go into school and my brain and my mouth and my hands worked. I'd got people there who could lift things down or do things, the physical things, but I could run my school very effectively. Now, what would you do? Focus on the lack and what you couldn't do, or focus on something that you loved and really had a purpose that you could?
And for me, after I stopped crying.
There were dark days. I have to tell you that there were dark days, but I didn't stay down there long because my view was, well, there are more important things to do.
Right.
You know, I can stay being miserable or I can get on and do something useful. And part of that's my upbringing. You know, when I was a child, if I was down in the dumps, then I'd be told, you know, go and do something for somebody else. Go and do something and focus on someone who's, you know, that you can help. And it's been a very good thing for me.
And I'm sure that you have been such a great role model and inspiration for the children, because they look at you and they see that you are able to overcome adversity.
I think that's true. But for me, disability is almost a metaphor for life. Because if you think you're not good enough, you're not tall enough, not pretty enough, that you're too fat, too thin, too whatever, that limiting belief means that you diminish your ability.
Right.
My legs don't work very well, but I can get into my wheelchair, particularly the electric one. I only ever have it on full speed. and I can disappear. But you take those limiting beliefs into every moment of every day. And you talked about pivotal moments. And if I may, I'd like to share one with you and your viewers. While I was a serving principal, I worked for the government as an advisor, and I worked with the National College as a trainer facilitator and the London Institute and all sorts of things, not all at the same time, but to keep my school at cutting edge and to earn an income because our budget was so dire at school. And I thought that I was really pushing the boundaries because I was going all over the country. But after I'd finished headship, I then trained to be a neuro-linguistic programming master practitioner. And I did all of my training with one organization, so decided to go and see as many different organizations as I could. And I ended up at the Excel Center in London. Tony Robbins' course, Unleash the Power Within, 10,000 people on the course.
Wow.
And in the first morning, he talked about a program in California that he was running. And I thought to myself, I'd love to do that. But I immediately dismissed it, thinking, how would I manage? I didn't have a travel electric wheelchair in those days. I can't self-propel. How would I manage it? So I had completely dismissed it. that evening we did the fire walk, and I was determined, even though I could only stagger a few steps on my own, I was determined to do the fire walk. And I was really thrilled. With somebody each side, I managed to walk over hot coals in bare feet. And if you've got the right mindset, then you don't burn. And as I sat back in my wheelchair, I was ecstatic that I'd actually done it. The guy behind me was a double amputee. He had no legs below the knee. He tipped himself up onto his hands and he walked on the hot coals on his hands.
No, he didn't, girl.
He did. And in that moment, that was a pivotal moment for me.
Yes.
Because what it said to me is, if he can do that, then I can damn well get to myself to America and go on that course. That night I booked my flight, I bought my ticket. Since then I've done all his stuff, became a senior leader. I've traveled all over the world speaking, learning, teaching. And that's because that guy taught me that the only thing that limits us is us.
Wow.
And I've shared that story. I have no idea who that man is. He doesn't have a clue who I am, but he changed my life. And through the people I've spoken to about it, he's changed other people's lives. So my challenge to anybody who's watching or listening this is, how often do you self-limit? What are you doing or not doing because you don't believe it's possible?
Right.
And to say, you know, it's time to ditch that and to find a way. Instead of saying, I can't, ask a different question. How can I make this possible?
Absolutely. And how do you make it work? That is an incredible story. So you've written not one, not two, but five books.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your books, your publication, and your writing process.
The first two books actually came as a result. I left headship in 2004, but I wasn't ready to stop. Daytime television doesn't do it for me.
Right.
And I looked at all of my skill set and thought, well, I've got all of these skills. What am I going to do with it? So I took myself off to do a research project across industries in terms of, were the issues facing us in school the same as those facing different industries? And of course they were. And so Kickstart Your Career, which is designed for people leaving the world of education, it's how to be a professional grown up quickly, really. And then the second book, which is written for managers, is how to make the best, how to manage your staff more effectively. And those became my calling card when I first started working with businesses and corporates, because when people saw the book and actually saw the content was very practical, jargon free, a how to books, that opened doors for me.
Right. And that's what people want. They want, you know, they want something to engage in. They don't want just a read. That's like you're just talking to someone. Yeah. They want to actually engage and have some activities. And so the
it was a distillation of all the stuff that we'd developed in school.
Wow.
And why we were so successful. In 2009, there was a recession and I lost all of my contracts that were going to sustain me for the whole year in 1 week at the beginning of January. And I was talking, and I've always practiced what I preach. I am a coach, but I've always got at least one coach on the go. And she said, I think you ought to write a book about you. And I dismissed it, but we talked about it. And in the end, I wrote Chariots on Fire. Mm. Chariots on Fire is an allusion to my wheelchair. Lots of people see it as a thing of lack. For me, it's my chariot. It's what enables me to do things that otherwise I couldn't.
Brilliant.
And so Chariots on Fire is my story, or some of my story, and the strategies I used personally. Now, while I was at school, I had a very strong sense of purpose, but what in my work over the last sort of, since 2004 till a couple of years ago, I was working with organizations and teams and individuals, but I got a growing sense that I had a bigger purpose. And so I set up Genuinely You, which is around personal empowerment and changing the quality of life through leadership. Because if you get to the leaders, the decision makers, like a stone in a pond, it ripples out.
Right.
So whether you're a leader of your family or your church or your organization, your business, your society, the quality of leadership has a huge impact. And so I wrote Thriving, Not Surviving, The Five Secret Pathways to Happiness, Success and Fulfillment. Because what I recognized was whichever route people came in, whether it was personal or couple coaching or business coaching or business training, we had to cover beliefs, relationships, attitude and approaches to success, right, managing right. change and transition, and then how do you find your purpose and fulfillment? Mm-hmm. And so that book was written to be the bedrock, if you like, of Genuinely You. And I've got a personal and spiritual development program and membership group called the Thrive Tribe, Together Tribe. And then the second part of that, that's the thing that's brought it together, is the Enlightened Leadership Program, which has just been launched. And both of those bring together all of the work that I have developed and learnt, and much which has just moving it on, because I believe we need significant change in terms of the way in which we operate as individuals, as groups and collectives.
And that's, that's globally. It's not just there in the UK. Do you find that the people in the UK are receptive to this thought process, to this this shift and this awakening? People are very stubborn here in the United States. They are stuck in their ways, and their ways are backwards. Do you find that you're seeing resistance, or are you finding people that are really engaged?
I think the number of people who are ready to engage is growing slowly. And one of the reasons that I'm on this show really is because this needs to be global. Yes. And I've designed the program so they can be accessed from anywhere in the world. And I believe that we need a certain number to reach a tipping point. And once we reach the tipping point, then things will accelerate. People don't like change. It's hot wired into us. You know, when we were cavemen and women, change meant threat. Right. And so people stay stuck, even if it's very uncomfortable, because it's what they know.
But it also, it is threatening, because it calls you to action and it makes you move.
Yeah, you've got to do something.
You've got to do something.
If you don't change what you do, how you think, then you stay stuck in the same old, don't you?
Right. And
it's for me, it's how do I access those people who are ready to take action, who want to make a positive difference in the world, and who want to engage with other people who want to do the same. Because individually we can do so much, and we all are things we can do. Anybody who thinks that I can't do anything, spend the night in a room with a mosquito. You know, something very little can have a profound effect.
Right, right.
But collectively, we have so much more power, don't we? And I am hoping that there are people who are listening to this who will want to be part of it and come and join me and help me make that change little bit by little bit. I have a huge mission. So,
I'm a firm believer in each one must teach one.
Absolutely.
And that is what this show is designed for. It is designed for influencers and game changers, people that are ready to move from where they are, to get unstuck, and to take a chance and to be a risk taker and not be afraid. Yes. You know, fear is really a warning sign. It's a gauge, but it's also our best teachers. And things that hurt us the most are our best teachers. I mean, you're a perfect example of that. You know, you had a devastating fall skiing, something that you loved, and you've turned that around and you've not let it, you know, debilitate you. You've made it a vehicle for you to be an enabler to help others. So I think that you're awesome. And I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your time and, you know, dedicating it to the children, you know, in your schools, because again, being a principal, because you know, kids is bad.
They are hard work.
But they're wonderful too, if they have the right leadership.
If we don't teach them, if we don't give them a sense of values, of possibilities, then the future for them and for us is pretty bleak.
It is bleak. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Gina, and you know, how to purchase your books. I'm going to put the link definitely attached to all of your, you know, your YouTube and your podcast, but tell them how to get in contact with you to do a little bit more work.
The main website is genuinely-you.com. That's genuinely-you.com. If you're interested in the leadership program, then it's enlightenedleadership.co. enlightenedleadership.co. There's a Genuinely You Facebook group, which you can come and join, and there's lots in there. You can find me on LinkedIn, either through Gina Gardner or Gina Gardner Associates. And all of those will have my contact details. And I would love to hear from people who may be interested in being a participant or interested in being an affiliate.
Well, either way, you can't lose, brains.
Thank you.
This woman here has walked on fire, okay? And so I know what that feels like. I know how exhilarating it is. I know how the fear has set in. But that's not what we're doing here on The Edge, brains. We are leaders. We are influencers. We are game changers. And it's time to change the game.
I agree.
That's all I can say. So you can start by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Blog Talk Radio, going in and finding out what Gina Gardner is doing there in the UK, purchase a book, get some information, and stay close to the edge. Gina, thank you so much for being here with me. Come back, keep me informed as to what's going on. You know, we build relationships here. We're not just one-trick ponies. We don't just do it one time and it's over. It's an ongoing relationship. So I honor you and I thank you so much for being here with me today on the edge.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bye, brains. Have an amazing day. I love you.